age go down the same amount, it might all of a sudden go down really slow. And you're like, well, why is it not even going down? And that's because loads are to the point where, does that answer your question?
Okay. I thought, I had phoned, I had asked, and what I had been told was that that was, the total days were now being recalculated with predicted inflows. So thank you for the clarification.
Absolutely, there's never been any predicted inflows, and it's only been strictly, and it's not, we don't touch, I don't touch that since August, since I made it. It takes Styx data, like I mentioned.
Yeah.
And it takes lake levels. And actually, it takes, at every single lake level in Taiyi, there's a certain amount of megawatt hours that it can produce. So it changes, and it actually accounts for that, not just an average. When I say 430 megawatt hours, for example, that's not the same at elevation 1400 as it is at 1250, for example. It's going to be on a range between 430 to, you know, 400.
Thank you, I appreciate that.
So September 17th, let's see where we were. Okay, with all that information, knowledge of the increased hydro or decreased hydro generation in Ketchikan, increased loads on SEPA's system, the high pressure system building in off the Gulf of Alaska, and the models showing that if we stop now, the worst that we can happen, worst case scenario would be that we reach the FERC limit. The normal case scenario, what we still expected was that we would have a possibility of 37.5 feet in the lake. So we had to make that determination that we're going to curtail now. If we do get 37.5 feet of rain or of water left in the lake, and we had KBU burn diesel in September, is that additional dedicated, was that justified? Because hindsight is 2020, and I can win the lottery today if I, or yesterday if I knew the numbers today. So if this actually was what was predicted, if this actually occurred, that was the reason why we made so many points to say, not only was it the models, because obviously people are having concern with the models, but it was also the weather forecasting, it was the loads, it was the timing, there was a lot more justification, and that's what we needed, because to just curtail on a guide curve, if you read the operations plan, the last page, it says it is used as a guide, and SEPA will operate to in an attempt to balance the lakes to that guide curve. That is the intent. But once you're way below the guide curve, we had already done that. The only thing we had left to do was curtail. And that decision was crucial. Timing of that decision was crucial. And that's why we made it on September 17th. I discussed the models. I talked about Chuck Howard, who developed the models. I even called Chuck Howard last week, or a couple weeks ago, and I asked him about it. And I said, you know, what can we do better? And he reiterated to me the exact same thing he said in 2010 is, you got to get better weather forecasters. Because if you look here, I took from January 1st, and I started about the UAL, but from January 1st, 2018, to December 31st, 2018, I have Styx data that tells me what inflows were in Taiyi and what loads did Petersburg and Wrangell use. So then I went back to January 1st and I pretended like I didn't know. And I had that data and I said, this is what I predict the inflows are going to be. This is what I predict the loads are going to be. And you can see here that the blue line is the model and the red line is the actual. Sometimes the model is above the actual, and sometimes the model is below the actual. But on average, for a model, it's 0.25% error. It's actually pretty incredible. I did it for September 17th to January 20th as well, to see if it would make it through the what we are seeing right now, and I saw a very similar result. That's kind of a discussion or a point of a stopping point for discussion.
So to me, Robert, let me put this on here. I think the question comes down to start with in regards to the op meetings is you guys have all the data. And so how do we convey that and who should be, how's that going to work better? You know, we talked about transferring information, maybe a better guideline that shows historic compared to actual. I heard a lot of things today in regards to looking back, some of the things that maybe we should look at a little closer and who should have been informed. So I guess that, to me, in regards to the discussion about whether draft limits, whether we use the FERC limit or the approved limits, those are discussions we have to have in order to correct what we're doing so we feel more comfortable as communities in regards to where we're going. And I don't know if anybody else has anything on that. I think that's some of the stuff we're looking for, some of the questions that we're asking.
Can I address? When I first started with SEPA, we used an Excel program. And in that Excel program, we showed the NOAA. We showed how we would operate. But since then, I developed algorithms taken from Chuck Howard's model and integrated them into the operations plan. And I have gone as far as taking predicted inflows for the next 10 days on the rain forecast and showing how that's going to affect the lakes every week. And it's been pretty close to accurate. It's really challenging to take a forecast of 1 inch on one day and 2 inches on another day and put it into that model and then see if it, how the results turn out, especially with snow inflows. So I have put a snow inflow algorithm in there that is from the United States Army Corps of Engineers that predicts the amount of snow melt based on rain on snow events and temperature. I have divided every one of the drainage basins into about 10 or 12 different elevation categories because for every 1,000 feet, you change in temperature about 3 degrees. That has been integrated into the model. That's a weekly forecast model, and we do that every week. We show how exactly we plan to operate the generators, almost down to the megawatt. We show exactly how we think lakes are going to respond from that. And then we talk about what we have for our operations. That was the one thing Chuck Howard said that would have been good, and I discussed what we had done, and he said, now, if only you could get better inflows for the rest of the year and not just the next week.
as you walk us through your models, Robert, I can appreciate how you made the decisions that you made, and I can certainly see that you're a data-driven person, and you obviously just can't sit in your desk and make gut reaction decisions, and I totally appreciate that. You're an engineer. You're going to work numbers and have a formulary-based decision process, and I truly do appreciate that. So, and I'm glad that you're looking at these other things and speaking to the man that helped develop the model so that you can hopefully create some other feelers out there that are going to help to inform your model. So I appreciate that. I think my concerns come down to that for our community, we started to have concerns about what was going on there at Tai in October. And one of the things that we have that's somewhat unique that Petersburg doesn't have is we have a bunch of little folks that fly back into the community and they talk to friends and loved ones about what they see going on out of the project, and that trickles back to us in terms of the lake levels are really low. You know, I have had a men's lunch and was told that we're going to be burning diesel like crazy, And so we reached out to Trey, and we also had our own plant operators, our own utility folks saying, hey, we think there's a problem here, and we would like to do some partial diesel runs to offset hydro moving forward into the winter. And Lisa spoke to me, and we got on the phone with Trey, and I got on the phone with Trey a couple times myself, and that was the point where Lisa and I started weekly looking at levels and looking at what was going on and talking about our own issues for our diesels that we have that we're dealing with. But we felt a very high sense of assurance from Trey, and I think sort of, if I can characterize those conversations, it was, if you guys want to do some diesel runs and offset some power, you can do that. That's definitely your right. And we were like, well, you know, we can be burning diesels in Rankin, and Petersburg can be burning hydro, and we're offsetting 55% of the hydro, or 45% of the hydro, and that's not very coordinated. So we were like, okay, well, we'll wait. And this happened. The other thing, too, that we were told as we were meeting was that, you know, there's lots of different ways this can go down, and we've got other options here. You know, and we're confident the inflows are coming, but the other thing to remember is that Swan doesn't typically freeze up, and Swan has more inflows, and Swan has this. And we can pull power from Swan and ship that deficit back up north. But key in that question was, we never, and this is my fault, I never said, you know, we need to have this dedicated resource, and if our rate payers were all of a sudden burning diesel through the winter, that's not going to make us happy, and we're going to be looking for some cash. And I didn't say that. I probably should have. But we did, in October, after our conversation administratively, I went and looked at the gauge, the Swan gauge, and it had gone up. I mean, the reservoir had gone up, and I was thinking, okay, good, we're banking some power out at Swan in the hopes that power will come north when we start to get down to our lower limits. And remember, in September 15th, so this is a month later, and it didn't change much, we were 100 feet lower than the dike. We were, you know, back in January, we were...
Those of you online, could you please mute your phone?
That's a bud die.
So we were where we were usually in April, the dry point. So we were concerned. So in October, I went away doing my thing, and I was feeling like, okay, we're banking water. And through December, we came to the board meeting, and I didn't feel, and maybe I was wrong, but I did not feel a sense that, hey, things could get pretty bad here, folks. We need to start preparing for this. And we, one of the things that we had asked for repeatedly is that we in Wrangell would prefer to do a slow burn longer than a big burn shorter, because we only have 4 units, and if one of our units fails, we're in real trouble. And we got through December in the board meeting, and I got back, and Lisa called me into her office and said, hey, there's no water in Swan. They've been selling it off. And I'd been back in my mind thinking we're banking for the north end. And that was when we had a pretty hard conversation with Trey about, hey, what the heck is going on here? We're not seeing inflows. It's cold. Again, and I will say, we initiated all of these conversations with administration. These were always initiated by us. And at that conversation, there was a couple of things, and maybe I misunderstood. One of the things was that the power sales agreement is somewhat open to interpretation in terms of what is a dedicated resource, which in Wrangell's mind, there is no question what the dedicated resource for the north end is. And that's Tyee, and I represent that even in this board. And the second thing was raised, well, when's the reset? When do we say, well, what happened the previous year is done, and now we're starting over again, so whatever was sold to Ketchikan is a done deal. And at that point, I said, I don't feel that either of those things are appropriate, and that something's going to happen. It's either going to be, you're going to be shifting this power from Swan or money out of the bank account. It's one of the two, but our ratepayers are not going to take this on. And then a meeting happened with Ketchikan, and we received notice a couple of days later that Ketchikan had said, okay, let's try to get, I think it was 6 megawatts, is that correct, Dan?
Gigawatts.
Back up to Wrangell and Petersburg to help get us over this hump. But unbeknownst to me, there was a second memo written to SEPA from Ketchikan saying, we're only going to do X amount. We're not doing it anymore. And I guess for me, I never in my wildest dreams thought that I would be able to say to SEPA, you know, you're only doing so much at a tie, and then that's it, the rest is ours. But I appreciate that Ketchikan felt that they had to put limits on, because, and as we phoned and spoke to Carl and Bob, we discovered they were having diesel issues, and we made a commitment in December, and we'll stand by that commitment today, that we would help Ketchikan no matter what. And if we need to ship some diesel power south, we'll do it to help Ketchikan out. We do it for Petersburg, and I know Petersburg feels the same way. At the end of the day, I think for me, the issue is that part of our mission is that we are to sell power. That is a part of our mission. We are to sell as much power as we possibly can, and I appreciate that. But another part of our mission is to support the communities that are members here. And another part of the mission is that we are meeting the power sales agreement. And from our perspective, that means our firm power requirements, which means our power needs to be delivered as much as possible out of Tai'i. Now I'll say, I think the solution, I don't think the solution is messing with your model. I really don't. I think your model's good. I think the solution is that we can't have a limit, a buffer that sort of plays chicken with the weather and with loads. Because you've already said those two things, or you know, inflows and loads, it's hard to predict, right? So I think this comes down to an issue of buffer. What do we need to feel comfortable between all the communities, what do we need to feel comfortable moving forward each year? I don't want to be spilling water either. That's not my intention. And I don't think we have to sit with a full reservoir at Tai'i because we don't, you know, never want to have any risk associated. But I think the buffer at the bottom is important. The second thing is the guide curve. I think we need a fence on the guide curve. And when we fall X amount out, and I can tell you, I don't think it should be 100 feet, of what our five-year average is for inflows moving along, we need to have a discussion about that. I'm not saying it should be an automatic this or that, but a discussion that says, you know, this is what the weather's saying now, this is what we're thinking loads are, and we're already running a deficit come September of 100 feet, and we're worried about making that 100 feet up. That should be a board discussion and not at an operations level, so that we can start to be engaged in where we're heading with that. So that's all I have to say.
And Steve, the next part of this, you're talking about possible solutions and risk mitigating methods. And this next part discusses those a little bit. We talked about the operations plan and why we curtailed, but we also haven't talked about how we operate. And we look at Tai'i and Swan Lake as one. We balance those to maximize efficiencies and optimize the output. So we have to be able to send water north. Just as we send water south, we have to be able to send water north. And I'll show the history of that water being sent north. Since I've got data on it, at the tune of 37 gigawatt hours. 202 gigawatt hours were sent south. So, although there was a lot of energy sent from Tyee South, we, in an operational point, in order to make this work, we have to be able to send Swan Lake to the north. And so the after curtailment review, I hope, opens the eyes on how SEPA intends and has operated and what has prevented us from doing that operation this year. Did we want to start that, or I think we're getting close to lunch here. How are we looking on time?
We got 11:22 right now.
We got 40 minutes.
What? About 40 minutes.
Okay, that's about a good amount of time. I kind of want to go back and discuss the estimates that we made in the 2018 operations plan. And we already went through these. We already went through what was actuals. So really close, the estimate versus the actuals. Running the model, or running our megawatt model here, from January 1st to August 15th, the Swan to Bailey line totaled out at 60,938 megawatts. So on August 15th, KPU had purchased more than what Swan Lake could provide in dedicated output for the entire year. So that was kind of an important date. On August 15th, like I mentioned, KPU had purchased the equivalent Swan Lake total production for the year, and all the deliveries to KPU made above that, 60,873, which has been identified as dedicated, in addition to what was actually produced by Swan Lake, after August 15th were only made possible by Tyee Lake Generation. Of course, on September 17th, we curtailed sales, we went through that. And Swan Lake at that time was at an elevation of 286. It had 14 feet of dispatchable water at that time.
To the FERC limit.
To the 272 board approved draft limit.
Just checking.
Yep, so 14 feet of water that was dispatchable by SEPA at that time. Looking at this, on the day of curtailment, you can see Tyee sending power to the south. And then boom, changed directions. Swan sending power to the north. That's when we began the net zero type operations with intent to shift power out of Swan, shift power out of Tyee, and kind of have a net zero across the STI, but start to balance the lakes as we traditionally do. And that's the intent, we balance lakes. Looking at this from a different perspective, Swan Lake on September 17th was at elevation 286, about 14 feet of dispatchable water. The draft limit, of course, at that time was 272. The blue and the green. The water in Swan Lake from Tyee is the green. Would only be made available there because of Tyee. The water below the 272 draft limit was considered dedicated because it was below the draft limit.
How much water is below 272?
What's that?
How much water is below 272?
About a half a foot.
Okay.
So on September 19th, KPU contacted SEPA concerned with dispatch of Swan Lake to the north and asked SEPA to cease and desist. So we got asked to cease operations and dispatch to the north from Swan Lake. Our concern at the time was that it hindered our ability to manage the lakes as we had done historically. And that it was required of us to actually efficiently dispatch and manage per the power sales agreement and the operations plan. After KPU deliberation, discussion internal to them, and our assurance that, okay, we really intend on just doing a net zero, KPU agreed to not force a cease and desist on SEPA and allowed us to operate in a manner such that we could ship power north and south with a caveat that we have daily reports of net energy sent to KPU to say how many megawatt hours were actually shipped in north and south. That first week, you can see power being shipped from the north from the north to the south, from the south to the north, on